Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you? Welcome back.
I am a 3,100-mile traveler.
Oh, my gosh.
We did 3,100 miles in 18 days, 7 states, lots of great conversations. My husband and I are still speaking to each other.
That was my next question.
Overall, it was a huge success. I'm sad I missed a couple weeks with you, but I've come back with a lot of stories. And I don't know, you know how much I look forward to these road trips every summer and in the fall. And I feel like every town in the country has something that's special about them and a beautiful place. And this trip was true. It was the same going through Idaho and even northern Nevada. And just briefly before we jump into today, at one point on the trip, we ended up in a hot springs in a little town called Hot Springs, Montana, which is way off the beaten path. And I'm in this funky little pool with my bathing suit on, with a family from Russia, and then a couple, and their mother, whose house had been burned in the Paradise Fire and had ended up through twists and turns in this tiny town of Hot Springs where they were living.
In the hot spring with you?
Yes, in the hot spring with me. Okay. But they were actually moving from Paradise to this little town in Montana because they just felt like they couldn't stay in Paradise, California anymore. And then a lady who was a real estate agent in this small town, which I thought, how busy could your business possibly be? Because we are literally the 8 people that are probably here in town today. But then after we had our conversation, across the street was an organic store, a natural food store, and they had a little organic cafe in the back that was booming with business. And I said, how are you getting all these people? Because I didn't see anyone when I came through town. She said, we purchased a billboard on the highway years ago, a few years ago, and people come in. The food was phenomenal. The people who worked there were beautiful and their stories were great. And I thought, there is some place everywhere that you can have a conversation with someone who's doing meaningful things with their life. And this young woman and her family, she is a mother of 2 young children. Her husband, they couldn't afford to buy a home, you know, in the bigger city in Missoula, Montana, and they couldn't afford to stay where they had been growing up. And so just by kind of, you know, trying to figure out where they could create a life, they found this tiny town of Hot Springs, and they were able to buy a home and pay it off, and they have this little organic restaurant that truckers drive through town just to come eat her breakfast burritos, and they have an organic garden. It was inspiring. I am back inspired.
Well, wonderful. So glad to hear it.
Yeah, so I'll be putting those conversations together and sharing them through part of the summer, and I'll be heading out again on the road probably later August and share those stories.
And those will be up on kcbx.org?
Yes, they will. Great. Because you're always so good at getting them on board for me. But for today, I actually am here in the studio with 2 live people to share their stories. And one of my guests, Doug Hoyman, has been a guest twice. I mentioned to my daughters that Doug was coming on today, and they both immediately said, Doug's a great guest. We love hearing his stories. He's very open and honest about his life and what he does. And today he's here in the capacity of as being a board member for the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools. And Doug will give us more information about exactly what this group does and why he's involved. When he's not an active board member on this and multiple other boards, he's also a lawyer in the community. And then John has brought along a friend. Doug has brought along a friend, John Elfers. And John has, I have to pull out my notes because John has so many things after his name. He's retired from the Slo County Board of Education, Slo County Education. He is a retired educator. He is an LMFT, licensed marriage and family therapist, but he also has a doctorate in psychology. And he currently works with the Community Counseling Center as a volunteer. He's the chair of the clinical counseling group that oversees the great work that's done by the Community Counseling Center. John is also a part of the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools. And John's wife and I have known each other for a long time. We just made that connection today. So it's so nice to have you here in the studio. And the reason that Doug reached out to me, and it's a, it's kind of a larger topic than a one sentence, but I'm going to try to parse it down, and then we'll jump into the bigger topic. But Doug said, sent me an email, said, "Hey, did you realize that in 2011 the FAIR Act was passed? It stands for Fair, Accurate, Inclusive, and Respectful Education in the state of California." And there was a concern that this act had been passed, enacted, but nothing had been done to really make sure that the intention of this act had been in place. And as a matter of fact, there was surveys done in 2013 as part of the California Healthy Kids Survey. And it was the first time that a survey was done of the kids of the state of California. And it was the first time that kids were actually able to identify as LGBT on the survey. And when they parsed down the results of that survey in 2015, shockingly, sadly, surprisingly, of the many different things that the students and kids were asked, 48% of the SLO County respondents identified as, well, they answered yes to the question, "Have you considered, seriously considered, committing suicide in the last 12 months?" And 48% were children who identified as LGBT. And then in 2017, the survey was taken again. And you would hope that when the results of the 2015 survey were seen, that things would be enacted to reduce that number, to identify these students or children that were struggling, and to help them to get the services they need. But in 2017, when the survey was done again, this number had jumped to 58% of those who identified as LGBT responding yes, that they had seriously considered committing suicide in the last 12 months. And that was just one of the many questions in the survey, but the response that kind of jumped out, and Doug said, "We need to talk about this." And I said, "Absolutely," because it's a bigger topic than I know a lot about, that it involves things that are happening at the school district level, in homes, in our mental health care agencies in the Central Coast and all of the counties in California. And the concern is, what are we doing? Because we're really good at identifying things that we're not doing well, but we continue to not be that great at enacting programs that really serve enough of the people, individuals, children in this case, who most need to have the services. And it's one of the themes of the show week after week, is that we talk about the need for mental health services. We talk about people who are struggling and suffering, and we can all identify someone or ourselves who struggles with mental health issues. Some of us can even empathize what those struggles might be, but very few really know how to jump in and do the work to help people heal. And so today we're going to talk with John Alfers and Doug Hoyman about the results of this Healthy Kids survey and some of the other results that came up in this survey, and then talk about what we actually will be doing as a community to help address these needs. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And you can be part of the conversation by joining us at 805-781-3875. You can find me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can follow me on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, where I'll keep you updated about shows and information and pictures of my guests. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can podcast our show if you'd like by visiting Apple Podcasts, search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, it'll load to your phone or your device, and you can listen at your convenience. I'm interested to see where the conversation goes today. I'm excited to hear what we're going to be doing as a community moving forward. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to get started. When you need me. Okay. Call my name, 'cause without you my life just wouldn't be the same. If you want me, them sunny skies are rain. When you need me, just call my name. If you miss me, well, I'll be there. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests today, John Elfers and Doug Hoyman. John is a retired, I said school board member, that wasn't correct. You're retired from the county.
Office of Education. Yeah, I was a program coordinator with them.
Perfect. And you're also a licensed LMFT.
Yes.
And you have a doctorate in psychology.
Yes.
And you have been a board member of the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools. And you work with the Community Counseling Center as part of the chair. You chair the group that oversees the clinical work.
Yes.
You're a busy man.
I am.
And then Doug has been on the show a couple times. You're a lawyer. You are also part of the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools. And this is a topic that's near and dear to your heart,
correct,
which is why you reached out. So I just want to jump in with the first question. Why should we care about the results of the health and safety survey? Why did this come about, and why should we care?
Well, this came about in 2013 when the Department of Education first asked the question on this massive survey that's conducted across the state, and they asked the question, how do you identify heterosexual, lesbian, gay, bisexual? And the second question, how do you identify male, female, or transgender, or other? Those two questions allowed us then to look at how the LGBT youth are responding to all of these health questions on the survey and compare them to their non-LGBT peers. And the results were shocking to us. I think you would agree, Doug, when we first looked at the results, and this is a group that had been working in the field a very long time, our jaws dropped. We looked at 55 health indicators. So we asked kids, have you been bullied? Do you feel safe at school? How many alcoholic drinks do you take at a time? Have you ever thought about suicide? We looked at 55 health indicators, and these are just the ones we pulled out of the larger survey. We thought, well, let's look at these. And regrettably, unfortunately, our LGBT youth in our community, middle school and high school, were significantly elevated in all 55. It was shocking. There wasn't even one that we could say, well, they're really not too much at risk.
And what did you expect to find? You know, when you said, hey, let's just check out and see how our LGBT kids are doing, what did you expect to find?
Well, I guess my first reaction when I saw these was, this looks like LA data or San Francisco data or a large community data. It wouldn't happen here in San Luis Obispo. I think that was my first reaction. So I was, especially with that suicide number, the 48%, I was just blown away. And it's not like, and you would think somebody like myself could very well understand, because I seriously considered committing suicide many times when I was that age, mm-hmm, and because of the stigma and the problems that I had growing up. So, but I think I believed that things were better today, and of course they are better today. You know, when I look at LGBT kids and what they go through today and what I went through back in 1,000 years ago, it's way different. The culture's different, but there's still a lot of angst about coming out sometimes. There's still parents that are unsupportive. There are still teachers in schools that aren't going to help you go through life, except if you are only straight, you know, cisgendered, et cetera. And so it was overwhelming.
And of course, this was a statewide Healthy Kids survey. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they looked at Monterey County as well and Santa Barbara County.
Yes.
So how did the whole Central Coast fare?
I can say, because I've broken down the data for the state of California and 30 counties, including Monterey and Santa Barbara and Ventura, so all along the Central Coast up into Santa Cruz. And the numbers of youth who are identifying as LGBT are very consistent. So just that alone is saying that, you know, they're not clustered in, mm-hmm, you know, the urban areas.
Right.
And the level of risk being reported by youth on the Central Coast as compared to the mountain counties, you know, Siskiyou County or San Diego all the way, is very consistent. So,
because yes. You would think maybe that San Bernardino County or something like Lake County, mm-hmm. a little more conservative, would have higher risk indicators, but that didn't seem.
No, that did not pan out at all. Mm-hmm. And I think what that does is it tends to validate the accuracy of the results, because mm-hmm. it just is so consistent wherever you go.
So, do you want to mention how many kids were? So it's 7th, 9th, and 11th graders every 2 years have an opportunity to take this California Healthy Kids Survey.
And through the schools.
It's only through the public schools. So as John mentioned before, it's not capturing kids who are in private school. It's not capturing children who are homeschool, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And so who knows exactly. But how many were surveyed?
So the numbers, as I looked at California, there's almost 3 million middle school and high school students.
Okay.
And of those, 6.5% identified as LGB and 1.5% as trans. And that translates into about 235,000 students in our state. Now, in San Luis Obispo County, that number translates to 1,274. Excuse me. And that's based on enrollment for 2016 and 17. But, there's another way to think of this, like, gee, is that a big number or not? Because mm-hmm. sometimes I get varying results. People go, I don't know, is that a lot or what?
Right, should we care? Yeah.
It is. So here's another way to think of it. In California and on the Central Coast, when 30 kids march into a classroom, which they do, six times a day in middle school and high school, and for every teacher who sees that new group of 30 students, two of them identify as LGBT every day in classroom.
At least. And because this is self-reporting, as the kids are – so in 2013, this is just me. I'm guessing that a lot of kids felt like, even though it's an anonymous, right, I can't come out, right? So by the time we're at 2013, 2015, 2017, by that time, I think more children are feeling more comfortable about stating who they are.
So maybe that – is why we're seeing higher numbers?
That would be a John.
Yes, we're seeing higher numbers in the percentage of youth identifying as LGBT. But what we're also seeing is the level of risk, on those 55 indicators. At least in San Luis Obispo, we have three data points from 2013, 15, and 17. We're the only county that has three, because we were the first one to
actually. Because John's doing the work.
Because John had
look
a
at
heart
that.
For this
That's
work.
Right.
But exactly. Now in most of the state, we can look at two data points. But what's showing is that it's the overall level of risk has not dropped. Mm-hmm. It has, we would love to see a trend where it seems like they are, they are doing better. But we are not seeing that.
Something I'd like to, one of the things that captured me in 2013 was the percentage of trans children reporting back in 2013 that they were carrying a gun, not a weapon, a gun. And so one of the things I want to bring up is that it's not because they're criminals. Mm-hmm. It's because they are feeling so unsafe. And this number, so it was in 2013, I'm looking at it, it was... Oh, that was the LGBT. Okay, sorry. It was 30.1% in 2017.
30% actually carried
a gun. Can you even imagine that?
No.
I can't. Again, that was another number that I thought, well, maybe in a really hostile, city environment.
Right.
But this
here
is
here in
this
the bucolic Central
not,
Coast.
Not that, whatever. I won't get into guns. But yes.
But clearly, as you said, there's 55 different areas that you looked at, from day-to-day bullying, being pushed, feeling safe. One of the things that...
Attendance, I think, is real important.
A lot of missing of schools. Yeah. And then I, of course, honed in on the caring relationship questions about... Mm-hmm. Who really cares about me? Who tells me when I do a good job? Who notices when I'm not there? Who always wants me to do my best? That the numbers of the LGBT kids were so much higher than the norm. I don't know how I even describe it. The others.
The others, yes. The non-LGBT.
The non-LGBT. And so, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we all should care, because when any group struggles with mental health, then everyone struggles because families don't know how to address, teachers don't know how to engage. One of my concerns always is that parents, when they start to struggle with how do I address my children or what, how do I meet their names, needs, they quickly send the kids to counseling instead of the parents sending themselves to counseling to find out how to best support their child. And I think those numbers of caring relationships would actually improve if parents went to counseling to find out how to support their child and then came back and showed all the ways that they love, support, and care for this child. Because I think when our initial response is, let's send our kid to counseling, the child then feels, I must be broken, I must be sick, and something wrong with me. Not that counseling's bad, but that's their first feeling. And so to me, that would be one of the quick fixes that I would say to parents. If your children are struggling, no matter how they identify, you go to counseling.
Yes, I think that's a good point. And in some of the research I've done, one of the biggest predictors of long-term health and mental health outcomes for the LGBT community is how their family received them when they came out. That's where it begins. I mean, and you think of it, that's really fundamental. Your family and how much of your identity is housed within that, you know, that space. And that is one of the biggest predictors. And then maybe beyond that, if we think of the school community, because those questions, well, one of the things or one of the ways we use these data are to share them with schools. And what I'm fond of saying is that those protective factors are the ones that schools have the most control over. You know, does every child feel like someone cares about them in the school? Does someone believe in them? Do they feel close to someone? Does someone notice when I'm not here? And that's what those questions are saying. And the LGBT community are very are elevated in that, and they do not feel as connected. So I think it's one of the ways that this assessment that we're doing can really help schools to pinpoint some ways that they can implement some things to make schools inclusive.
which was kind of where we started exactly. This whole thing.
Yeah.
The FAIR Act, which was passed in 2011, which stands for Fair, Accurate, Inclusive, and Respectful Education Act. What was the intention of this in 2011? Who brought this forward, and what was the hope?
It's Senator Leno. He's out of San Francisco, so this was at the state level. And the impetus was to teach positively the history of LGBT people, the Pacific Islanders, and students with disabilities.
Okay.
So all those had been left out of the equation, and there was no focus. And so part of that is also the negative. You cannot teach negatively the LGBT. So in defense of the state, which I'm not real happy to do, but they also, we know that a lot of legislation is passed without money. So there was no extra money added when this bill passed for the California Education, Department of Education to implement it. A lot of advocates throughout the state were under the impression that in 2014 the new curriculum would come out, the new books would come out, all this would happen. And John and I were very aware, and John was still working at SLOCO, that this wasn't happening. And so John tried to go from his route to go to the curriculum directors. I was trying to find all the attorneys and started to find out, I'd never been working in schools. There are 10 different districts in our little 285,000 people. We have 10 school districts. So there's 10 school boards, 10 superintendents, 10 different legal, or you know, several different legal. I thought everybody, you know, I was just blown away. So we weren't getting anywhere. I tried to do something through the state and it wasn't getting, you know, on a statewide call. So finally, we just, through our work with the Community Foundation and being on the advisory committee for the LGBT Growing Together Fund, we reached out to Cal Poly and the School of Education, and we started to put a, you know, coordinated effort, and that became the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools about, what, 5 years ago, four or 5 years ago? And it's been huge. We pull in from Santa Cruz. We pull in from Santa Barbara, Santa Maria, definitely, and around here, Orcutt and stuff. And we have people from school boards, we have teachers, we have parents, we have all sorts of people that are interested. We also have a very excellent communication with the ACLU in LA, the LGBT project, and they are very responsive and have helped us. They've come up here and done free training, and they're always available, especially to me, with legal questions as we go through and work with the different districts. So
the intention of the FAIR Act in 2011 was great.
Oh, absolutely.
The financial implementation, which is where a lot of great ideas, I guess, get held up. Mm-hmm. And so you, as a community foundation group, kind of took it upon yourself to take the intention of the FAIR Act mm-hmm. and start to see it implemented. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests today are Doug Hoyman and John Elfers, representing Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools. We're talking about the California Healthy Kids Survey from 2013, 2015, and 2017, and the concern that the students who identify as LGBT have a much higher risk for mental health issues, being bullied, not feeling safe, and suicidal ideation than others in the survey. And what is it that we can do as a community? I invite you to be part of our conversation. Our number is 805-781-3875 if you have any questions or comments. And I want to jump in with a question, Doug. When I look at this, LGBT, I keep expecting a Q at the end. Why is there no Q in the LGBT study?
You mean the alphabet soup? Q plus SSPP, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
So Q can mean queer or can mean questioning.
Okay.
So you would have to define Q for one thing. There are probably others, but I don't know. The queer word for me rings true. But for many people, it doesn't. And what does it mean? So you can find from 95 to 8 years old, well, you know, somewhere, there are all different definitions of what Q. For me, it's more of an all-encompassing so that it covers all of us, but that's not really true. And I would imagine you're at the age when you were in school, if somebody called you queer, it would be very offensive. So some of us have taken that word back. It was definitely a slang word or slam to me as I was growing up. But I bought back the word as we'd sometimes do. So it just would be too unwieldy. And I think John probably has some data reasons why that would be really tough.
So this is a survey administered by the California Department of Education.
Okay.
So
The Healthy Kids Survey.
Yeah. So we were very fortunate that in 2013, you know, that they added the question lesbian, gay, bisexual, to ask them to and then also transgender. So to ask them to parse that out a little more into, well, do you identify as queer or this, it just would have been too much and actually overwhelming. It would have been harder to compare the data. On the downside, it forces middle school and high school students to self-identify in one of those categories mm-hmm. where they may not feel, well, I'm really not transgender, I'm really non-binary, or, you know, like that.
I would like to address the non-binary. That's a law. The new law went into effect in January. And so at that point, so if you go get a driver's license today, they have to issue male, female, or non-binary. That's supposed to be available to everyone. So this next in 2019, they're going to have to add that because it's a law. They're going to have to add and allow children to self-identify as non-binary.
So will that then bring in the Q, or will there be another whole subsection of
subsection will be non-binary, I assume.
But we'll have to address that
when it comes through.
Because the last time you and I talked, we talked about the idea of identifying as cisgender, transgender, and instead of having someone identify as transgender, as you do, why then that continues to make you feel other, right? Then it's still always, if I'm not normal, I'm trans.
Right.
So then why would we not have cisgender, which means you identify as your
gender that you were
born with. So then would that make it then more inclusive if it was the health and safety of cisgender, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, Q?
There's no Q.
And then we would have no Q.
I don't think Q is ever going to come into the, unless maybe 20 years down the line.
because I don't want to go too far off our topic.
Yeah.
But I think that's in a way what makes this conversation challenging for a lot of people to jump into, because the language around it feels intimidating or scary. Mm-hmm. What if I say it wrong? What if I address someone incorrectly? I don't want to talk about it because I don't want anyone to be offended. And so then we don't talk.
Yeah, but I think what I would encourage anybody to do is, we all make mistakes. I may call you a he. You know.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. you know, and so if you just do the very best you can, don't avoid it, and just ask for forgiveness if you have to. You know, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. Did that offend you? Okay. Then I'll do something different next time. And just don't, you know, beat yourself up and please address us. We're human beings.
But then I'm going to switch to John, because you are working in the psychology piece of it. From my position in education, I feel that there's, in the last 5 years, maybe 6 years that I've been doing this work, a generation gap between Doug's and my generation, and just make a mistake and I'll correct it, and no room for mistakes and errors on the part of those that are educators. Have you? So you're looking at me like, no, yeah. I don't know this. To be honest, this is my concern, is that this younger generation coming up is wise. And they've been speaking in this language since the time they were very young. Mm-hmm. That is a benefit, that things have changed.
Yes, I would agree. Yes.
That the youth of today have a lot less problem talking about identifying an LGBT and cisgender, transgender. It rolls off their tongue. They know this. They come into the classroom. They're expecting us as educators to be right on. Mm-hmm. There really isn't room for that kind of error, is my experience now. To be honest. Okay. And so I guess that's why I'm jumping into, how do we then address this disconnect for these students in classrooms? Because I think there's a higher expectation that educators are going to be on it and not fumbling around for the right language.
Well, I think one of the things is that we are working with, should I say which school district?
Yeah.
San Luis Coastal Unified School District.
Okay.
And they are heads above any other district that we've worked with, and they're working on a 5-year equity plan with a lot of emphasis. So the kickoff of the school year was with everybody, not just teachers, but teacher staff, bus drivers, et cetera, and it was all focused on equity, not just for LGBT, but for everybody. And they.
So what does that look like when you say equity?
Equity, not just, okay, so John's got this wonderful little Pictionary part where it shows that these two kids are brought up to, you know, the level, and so they're equal, whereas equity is actually giving each person exactly what they need. So let's say I need extra reading lessons, but you don't. So we don't get the same thing. I get the little help I need so that I can participate at a certain level. And I think we talk about that with a lot of marginalized communities. And so that's what I think of as equity. And that's what I think that San Luis Coastal is working on. And you know, we're going to be talking about bystander training. They brought in Gender Spectrum, came in and did training. They're going to be bringing them back again this fall. And I think they were totally amazed at how well it was received and how good it was. And a lot of teachers walked out of there and went, everybody should have to see this. And it's a focus on not this transgender, it's a focus upon how gender affects all of us, how our stereotypes affect all of us. So
yeah, I would agree.
Too deep into that.
I think some of the big messages are really for the adults, because you say there is that generation gap. And I think for people in my generation, the one of the first messages is, you know, it's not about the LGBTQ and all the alphabet soup. You know, what does it mean to me? What does gender mean to me? Mm-hmm. You know, and inviting people to look at some of the ways in which their, you know, presentation or understanding of themselves is not binary. It's not exclusively all male or female, that it's kind of a mixed bag in there.
And so simplify, look at tattoos. From when I was a kid, if a guy had a tattoo, that was okay. Women, oh my God, right?
Yes.
So now look at it. It's totally acceptable, and there's some beautiful art with it. And then look at earrings and jewelry. Things have changed, and I think you're right. It's bringing on the adults.
And I think it's opening up the conversation, because I think with youth, even though, you know, there are so many words and terms that they can use to describe their personal experience of gender, and then those can change weekly, you know, with some middle school
daily,
students.
Daily.
They yes. may be, well, and so it, to me, what's interesting about it, and I think fun, is that it can be an ongoing conversation. How are you showing up today? Mm-hmm. Really, that is the, yeah. you know, maybe the question. How do you identify today? And honoring that and recognizing that, you know, it doesn't have to be a threat to how I identify, or that I have some expectation that you identify a certain way, or that, well, you don't look the way you identify. I mean, all those sort of things that might come into play. And I think it invites all of us to, you know, to look at ourselves. And I think that's a good place to begin.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guests are Doug Hoyman and John Elfers, here representing the Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools. We're talking about the California Healthy Kids Survey from 2013, then 15 and 17, and the results, and the shocking amount of the rate at which LGBT students affirm having a more difficult time in school, at home, than the rest of the population, and what we can do as a community to help bring equity to our school system to implement the FAIR Act from 2011. And you're invited to be part of our conversation, 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls.
Whenever you stumble, whenever your problems overload, whenever you worry, know that your heart don't beat alone, and I will be waiting with a hand to hold on to, 'cause in this home, nobody cries alone. So when you're feeling all alone, I'll be shining on like a starlight, waiting to guide you home. And like a candle holds the light, I will hold you through the night. I remain, 'cause nobody cries alone. Whenever you tremble, whenever your voice can't find the words, whatever your trouble, know that your heart don't I will be waiting from today to 99 through the darkness, 'cause nobody cries alone. So when you're feeling all alone.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. Okay, so Doug and John, I brought up at the start of the show that when kids struggle, parents' first response is send them to counseling. And I would encourage parents to send themselves to counseling first, or even grandparents or aunts and uncles, to get comfortable and know how to support their child, so that their child doesn't feel like there's something wrong with them mm-hmm. because they're identifying differently. And parents can be provided language. But as a LMFT and a PhD in psychology and working with the Community Counseling Center, I'm going to put you on the spot. Okay. What are some ways that parents can create, and teachers, what is the language they need to use to start building equity for their children?
Yeah, I think, and I would say equity and safety, too. You know, that feeling of, I mean, I think one of the best things parents can do is sort of admit, you know, that things are different, and to be able to look at their child and say, you know, like let's say a child who's 12 comes out and says, oh, I think I might be lesbian, or I might be gay, or something like that, to, you know, be willing to admit, you know, this freaks me out. I need to educate myself. I'm not sure what this means. And I love you.
Okay. This is three simple words.
Mm-hmm. This does not change anything. The problem seems to be with me. You don't seem to have a problem, other than, you know, you might have been a little afraid of how to say this. And I honor you for being honest. I must have raised a wonderful child. Who could be this honest with me? I mean, those kinds of things. I think you get the point that mm-hmm. that's what needs to be there so that parents don't further stigmatize, marginalize, make children feel less than because, you know, they're really just being honest. This is how they feel, and where does that come from? I think we can be very clear that, being around other LGBT something, you know, makes kids to be a certain way. This is who they are. I mean, and we've seen that over and over. And so we really encourage parents to reach out to the many resources in our communities. Mm-hmm. I know in all the counties, Monterey, Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, there are many resources that people can access. And
for not just parents, but for students, because Doug, you mentioned that there's been some trainings available.
Yeah, so more for folks in the transgender community. So, for instance, we've had parents, grandparents, and kids all attend Trans Tuesday, which is at the Gala Center, and it's open to all. And we also have a trans youth group that's meeting twice a month now. We have a parents group because they were sitting there in the middle of the center with the youth group going on in one room and the adult group going on in the other. And so we also have done some trainings. Gala has done some trainings. The last one was in the Copeland Center for folks from the community and parents who want to know a little bit more about trans. And one of the things, the first thing is, especially if it's a trans or non-binary, find out how they want to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Do they want to be, or do they want he, she? Are they? What is their preferred pronouns? And what is their preferred name? Because they may not like the name you gave them, and that could be anybody.
Right. Right.
But I think just, and I have to go back, I almost tear up when he talks about what it would have been like to have a parent, and I see parents today that are doing that for their kids and just being open and saying, you know, I really don't understand it. It freaks me out. I don't know, but I love you. And it's not going to change anything. And that is just so heartwarming because
that was not your experience.
That is not my experience and not many people's experience back in the day. So it still happens today, unfortunately. So many kids are out on the streets because of being kicked out for being LGBT and coming out to their parents. So,
yeah, you know, I think it's sort of natural for parents to have that thought of what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. You know, it must be something I did, or did I not parent right, or you know, to either blame themselves or blame the child. And to get beyond blame, there's no blame here. It's just, okay, here's a situation. How can we address this?
How can I support you in the best way?
Yeah, support
to be the best
your growth
you
and development.
But I appreciate what you're saying, John, because I think it's natural for parents to put so much of their ego and identity and hopes and dreams and vision of what this child's life is going to be in place. And so you're going down a path as a parent, and then your child has a different path. Mm-hmm. And that first gut reaction is, wait, that's not my plan. You changed the way I envisioned this to be. And so I think, I don't know how that changes, because that inherent sense of I'm a parent and I will determine everything that happens in this child's life, when you finally realize I don't have control over who my child's mm-hmm. going to be, I think that's like shock number one for a lot of parents. Like, oh, wait, I don't get to plan out your future, and then you follow it. And now how do I backtrack and re-envision my future with you? And I think we have to allow parents, as you said, that space to have to grieve, mm-hmm. you know, that vision, yeah. not feel guilty for that. Yeah. Because when you have anything that you've put out into the world and you've put your heart into and it changes, you still love that child, but you have to grieve that.
But I think I want to give kudos to parents.
Yes.
I mean, I think a lot of parents, it is about our ego. I mean, but I think it's also comes from a protective.
Yes.
Because they believe that it's going to be so much harder if their child is LGBT. And it is today, but why is that? Not because the kid's LGBT, because of society, because of families, because of schools, because of churches, and all the crap that comes out And so if we would just take them as who they are and just treat them like anybody else, and it's just that that one little thing is different, then, you know, so in defense of the parents, they're also thinking of safety. And,
right.
And you know.
That heart.
That heart mm-hmm. that's going to be so hard for them.
Our number is 805-781-3875. Margie, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I had a very important experience at Pride in the Plaza a couple of weeks ago. In talking to just about everybody I could talk to, I think I like to do what you do, Elizabeth, go around and talk to people. And the way that I approached most of the folks that I saw there was by asking them what is their preferred pronoun. And everybody was very happy to either give it to me, or the interesting thing was some people would say guess what what you think it might be. And that really put me on the spot.
That is dangerous. Like saying, guess my age.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And, this whole conversation brings me to tears. I am a new member of Coalition for Action Through Race Matters, and we have formed, I think you maybe all realize that the race is an acronym for something that, frankly, I cannot remember right now. But it has more to do with the color of your skin and your race. And when we were in this workshop, there were about 30 of us, and our introductions included name and pronoun. And it was just so easy and so common, so accepted within that group. And I felt really supported in that way. Another thing I just want to throw out is that my 15-year-old granddaughter had a big camping birthday party. And there, I knew this, but I hadn't seen it really. There are three boys in her in her group of best friends. And they are, nobody even questions it. Now, you know, me, I'm 80 years old. I'm thinking, okay, they're gay. Big deal. But I asked Fiona, and she said, I don't know. They're just my friends.
Oh, that's beautiful, Margie. And I think that's what John's kind of bringing that message in, Doug, is that open equity and inclusivity has to do with just acceptance on a broader scale. And so I want to come back for the last part of the show to what initiated Doug's email to me, which was the results of the survey that was done first in 2013, the California Healthy Kids Survey, then again in 2015, and then again in 2017. And unfortunately, although we're having this friendly conversation about, hey, let's just be accepting and let's just love our children and parents are trying their best, the statistically, though, the numbers of LGBT students, youth who are identifying as struggling are going up. One of the questions, just out of the 55 that you listed for me here, did you ever feel sad or hopeless almost every day for 2 weeks or more did you ever feel so sad or hopeless almost every day for 2 weeks or more that you stopped doing some usual activities? In 2017, the LGB respondents were 66.5%, and the non-LGB respondents were 25.4%.
Yes.
That's a humongous gap. And that's just one of the many questions. And so is it enough to say, I love you, I see you, I'm there for you, to bridge that gap? What else is going on for these kids?
It's a very good question, because even though they may feel safe at home, the thought of being out in the larger community, you know, recognizing that difference, it's one thing to maybe come out to close friends, but to be public about it. And so it's showing up in the mental health profile of this group. If you look at the statistics for considering suicide and then feeling so sad or hopeless, I mean, that's an admission of some level of depression.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one of the things for me, it's almost, you know, if we knew there was a demographic that 2/3 of whom had a particular condition, I mean, what would we be doing about that? If I was a physician and someone identified as that, I'd immediately screen mm-hmm. for, are you depressed? But at the same time, I think we have to be careful not to profile.
Right.
You know, that's a real dilemma for me, because I meet a, you know, I'll meet a gay youth, and I have to admit, one of the first thoughts that goes through my head is, are you suicidal? You know, are you depressed? Now, the data would warrant thinking that, but yes. But how do I, you know, as a therapist, as just a human being, you know, how do I maybe acknowledge that this person might be struggling and might need some help? I think it's a difficult sort of balance to take on.
And what's the appropriate measure of help? Because that's the other thing that I always get caught up in, as we say to parents, you know, reach out, get help. These children, you know, need, but is it the right help? Because our first go-to, still as a profession, is to throw these kids on medications.
Oh, yes.
So is that helpful? Because to me, that's just compounding the sense that they feel different and other and broken.
Yeah, I think what's really at the root of it, if I think sort of mental health-wise, it's just simply not being safe. I mean, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy, what's at the bottom? I need to feel safe. Mm-hmm. And if I do not feel safe, then all these other things are sort of ways of coping with that. Carrying a gun, being depressed, mm-hmm. skipping school, all these things.
Not participating in activities.
Exactly. It all sort of comes down to that. So the more I think we can convey, like if I'm meeting someone, one of the important things I might want to convey is that I accept you, I believe in you, and I am a safe person. Mm-hmm. Like literally, I think that's one of the things. Because one of the things that the LGBT youth are saying on here is that they don't know someone on a school campus who is really safe, that they have access to, who implicitly accepts and believes in them. So I think the degree to just as with everyone that we can communicate that, I accept you and I am a safe person for you.
So safety really is our big quest. Because if we could pull out, from my perspective, but if we could pull out the mental health piece and not pathologize these mm-hmm. these young people and say, well, then if you're feeling depressed, then you must be mentally ill. If we could stop right there and say, no, if someone says, I am depressed, or I don't want to participate in activities, or I feel hopeless, we should first assume that they don't feel safe. That would be revolutionary to approach mental health from that position, just in that one statement. How do you not feel safe? Because if I can help you feel safe, then these other symptoms will alleviate and you will no longer feel that you are broken.
Something that I'm trying to remember, if it was 50 years ago, Virginia Reby started Project 10 in the LA district, and it was under wraps, right? She was a lesbian. It wasn't really, so she was a safe place. She started bringing books in. And finally, it became Project 10. So that's a way, look into the history of that. She just passed away this year, but there's a way to start a project. One of the things that the GSAs, so is Gay Straight Alliance, our Gender Sexuality Alliance, et cetera, it'd be nice to have one in every school. And one of the problems is that you have to have the students have to start it, but they have to feel safe enough to start it, right? And they have to have a good advisor. They have to have somebody that's really supportive. You know, and there's ways to have that happen. One of the things that we're putting together is to have a college student reach out to each one of those GSAs at this point, both in San Luis County right now and then in Santa Maria, and not in the other. That's just what part of the community foundation's reach. And so I hope that that's going to be successful in reaching out and saying, you know, I've got a communication link to somebody who's a little more my age, and maybe they can be a resource that they can plant into others like GALA, Central Coast Coalition.
So part of the message as we wrap things up today is about safety and this idea, you know, on campus we have a lot of people identify as an ally. I'm an ally, which basically saying I'm a safe space. You can come talk to me. So maybe we need to push that idea of being an ally out into the community. You know, remember we had block parents when we were kids. Mm. That was the safe house on your street. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we need to have ally houses in our neighborhoods that they can post it in their front yard and kids will know that this is a safe adult or someone I can come to. Thank you, John and Doug, for coming in and kind of highlighting the survey and the need for this conversation. If people want to get involved more and be a part of this, how can they?
Central Coast Coalition for Inclusive Schools.org.
Yeah, I think it would be, it's actually Central Coast Schools.
That's pretty
anyway,
bad.
You can Google it.
CCC4S. CCC, the number 4S.
IS.
And I think, yes, the Central Coast Coalition is a great clearinghouse. So if we are not able to provide what you need, we can certainly point you to where that is.
And also there's the Community Counseling Center, which is in a new location. Can you give the...
And it's very affirming. It's at 676 Pismo Street, and we have a brand new... beautiful office there. We have a lot of wonderful therapists who are eager to help. It's a very affirming space. It's a safe space.
It's a place to come in and feel.
You can walk in off the street. And if you are...
We have two youth groups at Gala also.
And I would like to put out, if you are a youth, we can see you for free.
There you go.
And if you do not feel safe at home, we can see you without parent permission.
This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests, Doug and John, thank you for coming in. We will continue this conversation next week. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'll be back next Tuesday.
It was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood. The blackness was a virtue, and the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel like death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was little risk involved, and everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place that's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Haunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Suddenly I turned around, she was standing there, silver bracelets on her wrist, flowers in her hair. And she walked to me so gracefully and took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from a storm. Well, the deputy walks on hard nails and the preacher rides a mount. Nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a funeral horn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from a storm.